Hello, students, and welcome back to another Lore of the Iron Kingdoms course with me, Professor Caster. Today we're going to be getting back on our subject of the Protectorate of Meneth Warcasters. And the Warcasters we're talking about today are Durant, Resnick, Malachus, and Durst. But before we begin, I thank you guys so much for tuning into this course. And if you could, please like, comment, and subscribe. It does help our channel to grow and keep the steam train rolling. And another thank you to Privateer Press for letting us read their fantastic lore on the channel. And without further ado, let's begin. And we'll be starting with Durant. But we do have some older lore on Mr. Durant when he was an initiate. So we're going to start with that. Not that much is known about him when he was initiate. Like most things, whenever they're still, you know, journeyman warcasters, a lot of information is probably not, you know, picked up. Because as most of you guys are aware with Meneth, even though they need warcasters, sometimes in the training process, a lot do not survive, so that explains why very little information is found from his early years. But we will go over this right now. Initiate Tristan Durant is quite young and far from mastery. His face still bears the mask of authority worn by full priest in his warcaster armor, an unfamiliar burden. Yet Tristan stands ready to lead his battle group against any who would threaten the faithful of Meneth. He is gifted with the ability to see beyond the physical and intends to relentlessly pursue those deemed heretics and blasphemers. Once this warrior of the Creator locates his quarry, he will not hesitate to cleanse the battlefield of them with the might of his blessed warjacks and holy fire. So this guy seems very much of the cloth, as many of the Protectorate Warcasters seem to be. I don't know all that much about him since, you know, thank goodness I was more in the north and didn't have to go up against these guys outside of the, guys up in Lely's, but, you know, those were a little bit different warcasters. So I am interested to see what his changes are in Mark 3 to Mark 4, because again, I never had to go up against this guy. And also, he was probably pretty young whenever I was getting kind of old, so that's probably why we never saw him. So, but let's read his Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes and see what has changed. And as always, we'll start with the stat line, because stat lines are always important. So, he's still a speed 5, he is still a attack 4, because he is a journeyman warcaster, he's not full-fledged yet. His mat is still a 5, he doesn't carry any ranged weapons outside of his spells, I imagine. He has a defense of 14, armor 15, so pretty stout dude himself. He only has 5 health, which makes sense, he is a journeyman warcaster. He is a character, so you can only have one of them. And he does follow all the standard journeyman rules with that. He still has battle group controller, focus manipulation, power field, and spellcaster. He has to have at least one warjack with him on the field. And he cannot lead an entire force by himself because he is not fully trained, because he's a journeyman warcaster. His abilities, he still has his true sight, so he can ignore clown effects when determining line of sight. And he also ignores stealth. So that has not changed at all. His weapon is still a standard issue battle staff that the Meneth hand out to a lot of their German warcasters. If they survive or not, I imagine they just hand those off to the next one. But his weapon is still a mat 5, range 2, so he does have reach for everybody that played anything earlier than Mark 4. And he still has a power 11, and it is a magical blessed weapon. And for everybody that does not know, a blessed removes any defense and armor buffs granted to the model being hit by a spell. So that is always a very useful, because there are a lot of people with spells that increase armor and defense. And nice thing about the Protectorate is they have a lot of spells that, or they have a lot of weapons that are blessed that, you know, get over that, which makes sense since, you know, a lot of heretics like to try to protect themselves with unsanctified magics, as you're well aware. But his spells still include Fortify, so he can give his guys armor. That's the same that he had the original one. So target model in the spellcaster's battle group gains a plus 2 armor, and that model and any friendly models base to base with it cannot be knocked down, pushed, or moved by a slam. So sets them firm, sets them in place, and it's upkeepable. So yeah, you guys are a lot harder to damage if they're with him. And, you know, they can't be moved, so he can hide behind them and not have to worry about getting crushed by them. And then his second spell is Immolation, because every Protectorate of Meneth Warcaster requires some sort of way to cast fire, because that's what they like to do. Immolation causes fire damage on a critical hit. The model hit suffers continuous fire. So that's fun. It is a cost 4, cost 2. Range 8, pound 12. And yes, of course, it is offensive, because why would you be shooting your own guys with fire? Unless, of course, they like fire. Like, I believe there are some wolds in the circle of Oberos that like being caught on fire, and I believe we went over them in a previous course. So you can check that out if you are interested in seeing guys that like being on fire. But that is it for the journeyman, Tristan Durant, or Durant. I'm going to say Durant because it fits my accent. But yeah, he's just a journeyman warcaster, so link him up with any other warcaster. He just hands out armor, which is always good, and he, you know, catches people on fire, and his true sight ability is really useful against guys that have stealth. So, you know, if you're going up against a very sneaky army, he would be a good addition to any army, and he gives you an additional 4 focus to your overall army, so always useful. But let's check out his full-fledged version and see what we got there. Let's move on. Sovereign Tristan Durant. To many of the faithful, Sovereign Tristan Durant has become as much a savior as an instrument of war. With each new city or village he visits, the young warcaster gives rousing sermons to the inhabitants, crying out the tenets of the faith from town squares or the steps of local temples, and at each stop, the crowds that gather grow larger. Rather than simply preaching glory through suffering and repentance in the eyes of Meneth, Tristan speaks of a future beyond the constant state of war. He describes his own experience and conversion, demonstrating his humanity and compassion. He asserts that he feels the will of the Creator guiding his actions, lending him to the surety needed to remain both stern and open-minded. That his message contrasts with harsher leaders lends his words weight, but in no way does he detract from his capability and decisiveness on the battlefield. Since becoming a full-fledged warcaster, Tristan has continued to serve the Creator of the Northern Crusade, though his part in the conflict differs from that of the Protectorate's other warcasters. While Tristan knows the importance of striking down those who would willfully oppose Meneth and attempt to harm the faithful, he also looks to spread the word of the Creator to those who would hear it. Though his personality is very different, some of the faithful see it as a reminder of the Severus youth when the great priest ventured abroad as a missionary. Where others might become consumed by the demands of the crusade, Tristan has not forgotten the needs to address those who have fallen under the Protectorate's purview, often sharing meals with the impoverished, healing the sick, and holding counsel with local authorities so he might better understand their needs and concerns. He comprehends that the titanic changes necessary for the fulfillment of the Great Crusade leaves much destruction in their wake. He does not condemn this unavoidable upheaval, but intends to do his part to mitigate suffering and see the squalid hovels of the poor unbelievers replaced by inspiring temple walls and communities made safer for worship. In his mind's eye, this transformation will leave all the people of Imoran closer in harmony to the lawgiver, transfigured through faith and prayer. As his personal connection with the Creator has strengthened, so too has his combat prowess and ability to command warjacks in battle. In just a few short years, he has contributed to several major victories against the Cadoran forces occupying Lael, including holding the city of Bredosh against the forces of Winterguard, outnumbering his troops 2-1. Though compassionate, Tristan has no qualms about unleashing the holy wrath of Meneth upon his enemies, particularly those such foes that threaten the safety and security of those under the Warcaster's protection. Well, I guess he was in Lael. Again, I really never ran into him, so maybe he was super young whenever I was going through. I've been out of the market for a bit, so that's probably what it is. But he does sound very protective of his followers, which is kind of weird for Meneth, or for the Protectorate of Meneth, because they usually always see, you know, the people underneath them as, well, fodder for most of the time, like, unless they need them, of course. But yeah, that is actually quite a change. So Durant actually cares about his people. That's kind of nice. He's not one of the ambitious warcasters. He's pretty similar to Krios in that regard, I imagine, although Krios is a lot more destructive. But yeah, we will see what changes happened between Durant for his Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes and see how much better he got compared to his journeyman days. And let's start with the stat line, because that's usually where we see the first changes. He's still a speed 5. He is really not very fast, but you know, I imagine he's pretty strong, though. He has a focus 7. My goodness, he became a fantastic Warcaster. His mat went up to a 6. His defense is still a 14. His armor went up to a 16, so I guess they got him a little bit better armor from his younger self. And his control range is 14, as always, because he is a very powerful Warcaster. But let's check his abilities and see what has changed there. My goodness, his abilities have not changed, which is both great for him and terrifying for anybody that has to go up against him. So his abilities are, he still has True Sight, so this model ignores cloud effects when determining line of sight, and he also ignores stealth, which is great because that was his original version as well. However, with his upgrade to a full-fledged Warcaster, he now has Field Marshal True Sight, so everybody in his battle group also gains a True Sight ability as well, which makes him makes them all great for taking on ranged guys, or you know, shooting anybody at range, which also adds another interesting thing that he does not carry a ranged weapon, and he's not all that fast either, which is interesting, but it would allow you to charge through cloud effects, which is kind of always nice. And having the ability just to ignore stealth just allows his more ranged warjacks to be able to just clear him out or get into melee with whatever they can. So it does help quite a bit, actually. Let's check out his weapon, see what we got. Alrighty, we have Veritas. It is a mat 6, range 2, and a pound 12, and it is magical, although they took off his Blessed, so unfortunately it's a little bit weaker. Oh no, it still has an additional power point compared to his old weapon, but it's just a little bit weaker without that Blessed. But he does have critical dispel, so on a critical hit, upkeep spells and animes on the model slash unit hit immediately expire, which is awesome, although you do have to fish for crits on that, but with his 7 focus, that is completely doable. But let's check out his feat now that we are here at this point. Prayers of War. Now this one hasn't changed at all, and this one's an interesting one. So we already know that Durant has a high focus threshold at 7, or at least higher than the average. But his Prayers of War, Warjacks currently in his control range gain 1 focus point. And then Durant gains 1 focus point for each Warjack in his battle group currently in his control range. He cannot have more focus points than his current arc as a result of Prayers of War. But that basically means that not only do his Warjacks get stuff, but he could literally, if he had a bunch of, you know, say, Light War Beasts underneath his control, he could spend all of his focus to do a bunch of stuff, you know, himself, you know, at the beginning of the game. And then he can just replenish everything all at once and then hold a whole nother casting round, which is kind of scary. And if he has any kind of ability that he can just toss focus on, like a spell, onto a Warjack, that would make that even more powerful. But let's check out his spell list to see how useful that would be in the long run. Alright, first spell up, same as his original, he has Chasen. Enemy upkeep spells and animize on target model slash unit damaged by this attack expire. And this is a pound 12, range 8, cost 2, so not very expensive. Didn't really change from the other one, so that's a useful spell to have, because he can shut down all sorts of fun spells. Then we have Cleansing Fire, has not changed from its original. Cleansing Fire causes fire damage on a critical hit. It causes fire continuous effect. It is a cost 3, range 8, AoE 2, 14, 8. And so that's good that he still has that. Then we have Hand of the Creator, has not changed from his original. Hand of the Creator, remove D3 damage points from each friendly faction warrior model currently in the spellcaster's control range. And it can be cast once per activation. Now, this is a very powerful spell because it's not focused on one thing. It's everybody, every model that has health points in his control range, which is a 14-inch control range. So if you, this guy is, would be fantastic for the heavy-duty units or a bunch of Warjacks as well. Now, D3 doesn't seem like much, but it is enough to get a system back online, and it is enough to get, you know, guys feeling a little bit more better on the battlefield, especially those heavier armored units. So yeah, that is a very powerful spell, and you know, with his feet, you can do it twice. Yeah. Then we have Inviolable Resolve. That's what it is. And that one has not changed either. Target friendly faction model gains plus 2 armor. Can't be knocked down or moved by a push or a slam. So that's like his original spell that he had on himself. That is a fantastic for any kind of model, actually. Anybody could really use a plus 2 arm and the ability not to be knocked down, especially if they have tough or anything like that. But yeah, that plus 2 armor plus his, you know, ability to just shoot that out there. And it's an upkeep spell too, so you can set your guys up at the beginning of the game and just keep it running through the end. So that's nice. Then we have Manifest Destiny. While in the spellcaster's control range, models in its battle group gain an additional die on melee attack and melee damage rolls, and then you discard the lowest die of each of those rolls. That is phenomenal. Unfortunately, it's not upkeepable, but that probably makes sense. It is a cost of 3, so it's a little bit, you know, more costly, but having that in every model in his battle group, his guys aren't going to miss in their ability to ignore, you know, line of sight through cloud effects and ignore stealth is actually a lot more useful than you think. But yeah, this guy does not look like he really changed at all between his Mark 3 to Mark 4 cells. Maybe because he came out later, or maybe because, you know, he was promoted a lot later, so you didn't see him, they didn't really see a reason to have to rebalance him because he wasn't broken compared to what they were going to do in Mark 4. So that is phenomenal. But let's move on. High Executioner Servath Resnik. Those who have spurned the Lawgiver often enjoy a false sense of security outside the Protectorate of Meneth, thinking themselves safe from the Scrutators. These faithless learn their mistake at the edge of the High Executioner's sword. Servath Resnik readily imposes his will on foreign soil. He brings sworn writs demanding the execution of those guilty of sacrilege, sorcery, or religious treason, both inside and outside the Protectorate's borders. The High Executioner embodies ancient ways of faith, and his masked visage recalls the time before the rise of the Twins, when priest-kings reigned and the citizens understood that impiety would be met with suffering and death. He was raised in Kodor's northern mountains among the strictest sects of the old faith, who saw the local Scrutators as judge and jury. There he learned that the ministration of rack or execution invoked with the proper prayers might divest the soul of guilt as it fled to Urkane and grant redemption in the City of Man despite mortal failings. The way of the priest did not suit Resnik, however, and he soon abandoned the north. He journeyed south, where he had heard those of pure faith had carved a nation amid sun-blasted sands. At the time, not yet Hierarch, the monk and Scrutator Garrick Voyle saw Resnik's true soul in his eyes. He walked an instrument of faith who could kill eagerly and without mercy. In the hour of service, Resnik became High Executioner, and in the early days of Voyle's hierarchy, Resnik proved by numerous examples the Hierarchs would brook no insubordination or lack of resolve. To this day, stories still circulate of Menite villages burned to the last man, woman, and child at Resnik's hands, with none left to describe the reason for such punishment. The Protectorate's leaders have little love for Resnik. Only Voyle's successor, Hierarch Severus, tolerates his presence, understanding what sort of weapon his predecessor wrought in the man. Resnik's single-mindedness and almost inhuman appetite to punish the faithless has earned the enmity of Grand Exemplar Krios. Word of his purpose has spread to every Menite community across Western Amoran. He has earned fearful adoration from those who relish divine retribution, and they bring him the names of suspected heretics. Severus's great work in Lael has prompted Resnik to swear anew his vows of service. He has joined his strength with the Northern Crusade to carve a stronghold from the stubborn soil. The days ahead will provide ample opportunities to exercise his function and spread the fire of the Lawgiver across the darkened lands. Yes, Resnik is definitely what I have come to expect of most of the Protectorate, although there, of course, as we saw, some Protectorates that actually care about their people. And then there's Resnik, who burns without mercy and has a slight enjoyment of doing it. Although he says that he goes hunts down heretics, although he is an executioner, so the only tool you have is an axe, everything looks like a block of wood, right? So yeah, but he is a terrifying warcaster to behold. And his enjoyment of it really does show in this character. So let's read about the Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes, and then we'll see why this guy is so dangerous and see what he really brings to the table for everybody involved. And of course, we will start with his stat line, because that's always important. He's a speed 5, although he is a very, I believe he is a medium-based warcaster, which means he's very heavy set, and he does look like some of the other more heavy set models as well. Speed 5, his magic attack is a 6, his mat is a 7, so that probably means he's a melee caster. His defense is 14, his arm is a 17, so he's definitely a melee caster. He has a control range of 12 inches, so that is basically the same of from Mark 3 to Mark 4. His abilities are, he still has Excruciator, that sounds better. When this model boxes a living enemy model with a melee attack, you can place a rack into play within 4 inches of this model. And if you do, remove the box model from play. So this guy sets racks on the table, allowing, I believe, the original stuff. I think you can use those as arc nodes, but now I'm not entirely sure. Because I have not, again, had to go up against Meenith all that much. So I have not seen a rack, but we'll go see if we can find one of those and see what that does real quick. All right, after some shuffling, I found the archives for the rack, which does not look enjoyable at all. And for everybody that has seen a rack, that is definitely a torture device or penitence or whatever they want to call it. However, its stat lines would be, it's a defense 5, arm 10, so it's easily destroyable. And has fiery blast, so when this model is destroyed, models within 2 of it suffer a POW 14 fire damage roll. But what it's really good at is it's a focus setup. So during your control phase, this model receives 1 focus point if it does not have any. This model cannot have more than 1 focus point at any time. While this model has a focus point on it, it cannot be damaged by ranged attacks. During a friendly faction warcaster's activation, it can remove 1 focus point from this model in its control range and gain that focus point. Each warcaster can do this once per turn. When a focus point is removed from this model, roll a d6. On a 1 or a 2, it explodes with the same fiery blast that would happen if it was removed. So, and it's removed from play. So any bodies on it or souls are gone, obliterated. So this guy is literally putting himself additional focus points on the table, because he can pull this off as long as it's within his control range and these guys are still alive. He can keep pulling fury from these things, and if they explode, oh well, that's free fury or free focus. So yeah, so that's super dangerous, and he gets that for every person he kills. Now let's see how good he is at killing people, shall we? Well, first let's check out his second ability. So he has Witch Hound, and he had Witch Hound in his Mark 3 as well. And Witch Hound, when an enemy model hits one or more models in this model's battle group with an arcane attack, immediately after the attack is resolved, one model in the model's battle group in its control range can advance up to 3 inches and make 1 basic attack. So literally, they're hunting witches, and all of his cohorts hunt witches as well. Yeah, super dangerous. And if you're going up against a specially magical army, that is even better for you. Let's check out his weapon, because his weapon looks mean. So he's a mat 7, has a range 2, so it has reach. It's a POW 14, so pretty decent damage on that. And he also has purgation on it as well, and he had it on Mark 3 as well. So he gains an additional die on attack and damage rolls with this weapon against models with an enemy upkeep spell or animus on them, which is a free die, basically, because it's gain an additional die. It's not a boosted attack. It's a gain additional die. So this guy can be swinging up to a 4 on attack and damage rolls against guys that have animuses on them. So if it's like an armor buff or it's like an animi that make it, you know, more dangerous, he is swinging for the fences. So yeah, be very careful when you have to go up against this guy, especially if you like to defend your guys up, because he's just going to swing right through it. Yeah. Hey, at least he doesn't have blessed on top of that, because that would be even worse. But I imagine that is definitely a balanced situation. But let's check out his feet and see how good that is. Alrighty, and unfortunately, if anybody's ever gone up against Resnick, his feat has not changed at all, actually. And his feat's pretty actually awful for especially Horde's characters, since they require Fury, but let's read it over and you'll see why very quickly. Enemy models currently within Resnick's control range lose all focus and fury points. So that's everybody. So all war beasts, all warlocks, all warcasters, lose it all. Gone. Then while in Resnick's control range, enemy models cannot upkeep spells or be allocated focus. So yeah, that's also awful. And those casting spells suffer fire continuous effect. And then judgment lasts for one round. Not one turn, one round. So yeah, if you're close to this guy and he pops that, he's shutting down all magic everywhere, so you better hope that you are not a very magic-based group. Because not only does he remove all of your focus, fury, and whatnot, so forth, he will also catch you on fire if you even have the inkling of wanting to cast a spell. And for fire, that is a terrible thing, especially for, say, Circle Oberos with their Wayfarers, who, like to cast random spells to give, be able to blast people with rocks, and then they're automatically caught on fire, and they don't have the highest armor to begin with. So yeah, that is an insult to injury judgment for any magic user, and yeah, makes him even more of a witch hunter. But let's move on and see what spells he still has and see if anything changed there. And that would be a big no, looks like. So for everybody that has ever gone up against this guy, or for everybody that's used him on the battlefield, he is great at dishing out damage and great with a large-scale battle group, because, let's read over his spells and you will see why. He still has a Brand of Heresy, so it is a cost 3, range 8, upkeepable yes spell. Cohort models in the spellcaster's battle group gain boosted attack and damage rolls against target model slash unit, and it's upkeepable, so once you put that on somebody, you can keep it on somebody. And with his ability to, throw out racks, he can keep pulling in focus randomly, so not going to slow him down, ain't going to break his stride. Then we still have Engine of Destruction, which is makes him even more dangerous. So the spellcaster gains a +2 speed, +4 mat, and +4 to his melee damage rolls. Now this is a cost of 2, but you're really turning him into basically a warjack on his own. So you're kicking his speed up to a 7, you're kicking his mat up to an 11, and you're kicking his damage up to an 18. So yeah, if this guy is in melee, he just wants to stay in melee, because having a 7 speed, he can walk up and just annihilate anything. And if that model happens to have some kind of spell or animus on them, it is a automatic additional die. Yeah, he is a danger melee caster. So. Next spell, he still has Hex Blast, so enemy upkeep spells and animes on the model slash unit hit by Hex Blast immediately expire, so he can turn off people's spells and upkeeps and animes as well. Though that is upkeep spells and animes, so if it is just a standard one turn spell, it does not affect those. But let's move on. Ignite, so he can target friendly faction model slash unit, gains +2 to its melee attack damage rolls. And then affected models gain critical fire, so they also get the ability to potentially catch somebody on fire. And it's also upkeepable, so you can kick those on. And what's nice is it's friendly faction models. It's not just friendly warrior models or friendly cohort. So you can really spread this around, especially if you have some heavier set units you want to toss that onto. Because having the ability to do more damage and the ability to critical fire is always useful, regardless of what unit that kicks on. And then it looks like he still has Perdition. So when an enemy model is damaged by Perdition immediately after the attack is resolved, the spellcaster or a model in his battle group that is currently in its control range can make a full advance towards the nearest enemy. A model can advance as a result of Perdition only once. So yeah. So if they shoot somebody, then he can move, which is nice. And for a guy that has a normally base speed of a 5, being able to move again is always going to be useful to keep him a little bit more mobile. Although if you also have Engine of Destruction going at the same time you cast Perdition, well, you see where the danger stuff starts with him getting into melee. And he likes being in melee because he already has a high arm. He already has a pretty dang decent mat. It's not as high as like the Butcher's mat, but you know, he can kick it up to 11, which literally he can kick it up to 11. So yeah, it makes him even more dangerous. So my ideas on this guy, he definitely wants to be in melee, definitely wants to have some heavy hitters for his warjacks, and he might need some units, maybe? Question mark? I don't know. He's definitely a very, you know, he's definitely a beast in melee and a beast for warjacks. Keep it going. He doesn't really need any additional help unless you're trying to give somebody to give him more focus. Although his ability to, you know, start throwing out some racks after he kills people, once he starts doing that, you know, sky's the limit, I guess. But yes, let's move on to his more dangerous version, as if there is a more dangerous version, or at least a faster version at least. Let's move on. Servith Resnik, Wrath of Ages. Perhaps no man so perfectly expresses the spirit of the Great Crusade as Servith Resnik, a living weapon of his faith, fanatical even by the standards of the Solmenites. He stands as an embodiment of absolute devotion. For Resnik, the world is a crucible of flame, and humanity stands at the precipice of self-inflicted annihilation. And yet Resnik is no mere man. He is a furious legacy of an ancient world, a pitiless instrument of Meenut's divine justice and the reckoning of heresies from ages long past. Resnik has served the will of the Hierarchs for decades, seeking neither glory nor recognition in his deeds. In Meenut's name, he has slain or broken thousands, and without question, and will continue to do so long as he draws breath. The Great Crusade has unleashed this fury upon the iniquities of the faithless, who would seek succor in science, misguided philosophy, and the words of false prophets. He has taken it upon himself to serve as the standard bearer of the faith, an emissary of righteousness, ready to ignite the fires of truth across the whole of Amorin. Woe to those who would defy the true law. Resnik is a spirit of wrath bound but to the flesh of a man, mounting his iron chariot like an angry god. He is the vision out of time, when the domination of Menite priest-kings stretch across western Amorin, and the word of Meenut was the very fabric of civilized order. The truth of his power was seen by all who stood in his path when he joined the Harbinger of Meenut on the extended interdiction into Umbri, allowing the miracle of Meenut's prophet to be seen by the stubborn Northmen. It was Resnik who greeted the wayward soldiers who sought to stop their holy pilgrimage, driving into them as a vision of flaming destruction and littering the smoking battlefield with corpses. Behind him came the Harbinger, who granted the miracle of life to those whose souls she perceived would convert and therefore be worthy of another breath, a second life. By the Crusades, hundreds of Umbrians joined the Protectorate's cause, and thousands of shattered unbelievers were left to be buried. Despite the singular purposefulness with which Resnik conducts his duty, he waits for the day when he will be given sanction to blaze a path of destruction through all heretics that stretch from the world of the living to Arcane. There he will last join the Creator in the City of Man and will fight on his war of souls in his name. Yes, so one of the most dangerous melee warcasters in the Protectorate's arsenal has been made even more dangerous, because now he's been given a horse, so his speed and his armor has increased dramatically, making him definitely a will of Meenut that you do not want to see on the battlefield if you have to go up against this guy, because he is even more dangerous than he was before. But let's check to see how much more dangerous as we go over his Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes. And as always, let's check to see what his stat line looks like first, because that's always the important part here. So, his speed has jumped up to a drastic 7. He is now a magic user of a rank of a 7, so he has increased that. Well, that's already increased. It wasn't because of Mark 4. It's just, you know, standard. His mat's still a 7. His defense is still a 13. His arm dropped down to an 18 from a 19, so that was one drop from Mark 3 to Mark 4. And his control range has kicked all the way up to a 14. And the fun thing that he got, he is now a mounted model. He is a battle engine. He's now his breakthrough, so he can, you know, break through other models without having to lose his combat action, because he loves combat actions. And he has been given Trample and Pathfinder, and he's on 120 millimeter base, and his health has gone up to 24 because, of course, he is a battle engine now. He is no longer just a standard or casters. So let's go over his abilities in his group and see if anything has changed there. And guess what? Nothing has changed there, really. So he still has a curse for his battle group. So he can use curse once per activation at any time. And he chooses an enemy model slash unit 10 inches away. And that model slash unit models in his battle group gain a +2 to their attack rolls against them, thus giving them even better mat or rat. So that is a very, very dangerous thing. And he is repairable, so of course, because he is a battle engine, he can have people repair him and keep him going and keep his destruction going even longer. He still has reposition because he is a battle engine and a cavalry model, and all of those have reposition of some magnitude. And he was given Threshing Blade, so this model gains a +4 to its trample power attack damage rolls. So because he can trample, that's usually, I believe, a pow of 12 or something like that, 12 or 14. And then he gains an additional, so he gets up to like an 18 if he's slamming through small base models, or trampling through small base models, so that's even more terrible. Looks like one thing he lost was Lamentation of Suffering. That was, while this model has one or more focus points on it, non-magical attacks targeted automatically miss. That could be a little bit broken, especially since they gave him a 7 on his magic, so he could always have basically focus on him, and most warcasters always have at least one focus on them anyway, just for protection's sake. So that has been removed, so he can be targeted by magic a little bit easier. Let's go over his weapons real quick. So he has Verdict, which is a mat 7 range 2 power 14 magical weapon, and he has Weapon Master on it, probably because since this one removed his little free dice for people that had magical protections on them, they just gave him Weapon Master anyway. And a 2-inch reach on a battle engine base is kind of a remarkable amount of threat range for that, so very dangerous. And then he has Ram, so this is another one. This one does a mat 7 range 1 power 14, and it causes automatic fire and has critical knockdown on it. So yes, because what he needed was an additional melee attack, so that is even crazier than before. But let's go over his feat to see what we got there. Let me read over it real quick. Alrighty, and it appears this got nerfed a little bit, but probably because the Mark IV changes, because AoEs are now very different in Mark IV. The original one, so if an enemy model was boxed by melee or range attacks while in his control area, you center a 4-inch AoE on the box model, then RFP the model. Enemy models in the AoE are hit and suffer a power 14 damage rolls. Fire damage rolls, and it's not considered to be from caused by an attack, so things that would trigger from caused by attack don't happen. So that was the old one. The new one is still, it's basically the same, although the damage has gone down a little bit. So when an enemy model is boxed by a melee or range attack while in his control range, enemy models within 2 of the box models suffer a unboostable power 12 damage rolls, and then after resolving those damage, they're removed from play, and this damage is not considered. So basically, the only thing that this has done is reduce the power of the fire damage rolls down to 12 from 14. And also, that 2-inch is a little bit better if you're, clearing out large base models. So, yeah, because then you get that extra, half inch, getting up to almost an AoE of like 5, so, or 4. So, because it was the original 4-inch AoE on everything, that probably wouldn't do anything if you destroyed like another battle engine, because a 4-inch AoE on a battle engine is kind of just the base. So, but now it, you gain some stuff on that one and just lose a little bit of damage. So, is that better? Is that worse? Well, damage is a little bit worse, but I feel like it's a little bit better and easier to work with. So, all right, but let's see what his spells has changed. See if we got anything there. We still have Boundless Charge, so during the activation, target model, a friendly faction model can charge without spending focus or being forced, and they gain +2 speed and Pathfinder. So that's the same, that hasn't changed. We have Death March, so target friendly faction unit gains +2 mat and Vengeance. And during your maintenance phase, if one or more models with Vengeance is damaged by an enemy attack during the last round, each model in the battle group can advance up to 3 inches and make one basic melee attack, which is great. I recommend you put this on models that actually have damage boxes, because you can really get some swinging down on that one and being able to attack two times in a turn, one during your maintenance, one during normal activation, is always good. And plus two mat means that you're probably going to hit whatever you're trying to hit, so we got that. We still have Lamentation. So Lamentation, when an enemy casts a spell while in the spellcaster's control range, you double the cost of the spell. Additionally, they have to pay double to upkeep spells as well. And this is an upkeepable spell. This is part of his original set that likes to, well, really hammer it down on spellcasters. He does not like enemy spellcasters at all. And he will do anything in his power to make sure that they suffer as much as he can make them suffer. So, yeah, he is pretty terrible in that spirit. And then it looks like we have a new spell. Oh, no, we don't have a new spell. It's just a different area. So we still have Spell Piercer. So while in the spellcaster's control range, the weapons of friendly faction models gain blessed and damage type magical. And this is just a control area spell. So this affects everybody. And giving them the ability to gain blessed weapons and magical attack allows them to take out incorporeal models and then removes all spells that would increase the enemy's armor and defense. So that is, well, I'm going to say it's broken, but it is definitely a very useful spell. And it is only a one turn spell and it costs two. So, you know, use it when you need it. And yeah. And then the last one that we still have would be the Flesh is Weak. And this is a cost 3, range 8, AoE 3, 13-7. A living and undead models damaged by Flesh is Weak cannot run, charge, or make slam or trample attack power attacks for one round. So that's basically the same from the original one as well. Same damage points, same stuff. So yeah, he is basically the same from Mark IV. So just as dangerous, and my goodness, he really does not like spellcasters at all for any time. But he, with this new version with the battle engine, he definitely cements himself as a good warjack caster who can actually get in with his warjacks as well and do some crazy amounts of damage and take them out. So I would recommend him if you're playing especially large games. He is a powerhouse to behold, or even his original version is still a powerhouse. So yeah, get him in there, and if you have to face him, I am sorry for your soul. Because, well, he's going to take it because he's collecting souls for Meneth, kind of. Although he's not a soul collector in terms, but, you know, he will send your soul to Cain, or Urkain to be judged. So, you know what I mean. Let's move on. Malakas, the Burning Truth. Determined to bring Meneth's glory to the world, Malakas, the Burning Truth, carries with him the righteous fires of the Creator. His arrival is announced by his booming voice reading passages aloud from the canon of the true law. His departure is accompanied by the ashes of non-believers. Malakas spent his youth as a Morrowan orphanage in a small town just outside Caspia, where he was subjected to hard labor and unspeakable abuses by the authority of the unscrupulous headmaster. This early experience instilled in Malakas a hatred of the corruptible Morrowan faith. It was not until he heard the word of Meneth shouted out by a zealous street preacher that the boy saw a means to an end of his horrid existence. The Creator's righteous fire would cleanse his past and make way for a better future. After setting fire to the orphanage, he made his way to the Protectorate and pledged his life to the service of the Creator. He felt particularly captivated by the notion of holy fire and the freedom it granted him. Malakas spent the next years in the halls of the Flame Guard Temple and initially trained in combat, expecting to become a soldier. It did not take long for his instructor to discover his budding warcaster talent, at which point Fiora, Priestess of the Flame, herself requested his admittance to the Insidium. There he would ultimately serve as both priest and cleanser, tasked with burning away impurity both within the borders of the Protectorate and outside them. Malakas was elated at being singled out among his peers for this work, and he never forgets Fiora's role in shaping his path. From the moment he entered the Insidium, Malakas has dedicated himself to Fiora's service, a dedication that has aided his rise. He now serves as the primary intermediary between Fiora and her cleansers. Through the eternal fires of Meneth, Malakas has seen himself reborn into the existence free from the pain and misery that once tormented him. He has made it his life's work to bring the same release to those oppressed by the worship of other gods. Malak is ever willing to intercede on behalf of those willing to return to Menet's embrace, but he has only scouring flames for those who persist in blind in heresy. The Northern Crusade has opened new avenues for the Warcaster as he attempts to guide the wayward back to the worship of the Creator. As much as Malakus detests the corruption he finds rampant in others, he has never conquered his fear of the weakness inherent in himself. All too aware of how quickly impurity can take root, he regularly cleanses himself through flagellation and self-inflicted burns to maintain clarity of mind while performing his essential duties. Scars riddle his flesh beneath his armor like a road map of his past transgressions. So yeah, this guy is definitely a fire lover, and with Protectorate, that does make sense, and he would always find a happy home there. Self-flagellation is actually pretty common among the most pious of worshippers of Meneth, so he kind of fits the mold a little bit. But yeah, booming voice, fire, righteous judgment, the right-hand man of Fiora, which would make sense since he is also very big into the flames. So yeah, he looks uber dangerous, and I'm not sure what else to say about him outside of him just liking to catch stuff on fire. He's definitely a pyro, so. But let's read his Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes and see if there is any at all. And of course, we'll start with his stats, because, well, that's always where we start. His speed is 5. His mat is a 6. His rat has gone from a 6 to a 7, so he's got a little upgrade on his range attacks. His defense is a 14, armor 16. He is a particularly deadly spellcaster at a magic ability of 7 and a control range of 14. He is also immune to fire, as most of the Meneth casters who are enjoying fire are. Let's check on his abilities, see if anything changed there. He still has Ashen Veil. Ashen Veil is always a fantastic defense for these guys. So this model has concealment, and living models without concealment, or without resistance to fire, suffer at -2 to all their attack rolls while within 2 of this model. And that's not just protecting him, that's protecting anybody within that 2-inch range of him. So, very nice to have. So, basically, his defense goes up to a 14 for both ranged and melee attacks, unless they have immunity to fire. Then it appears that he no longer has divine passages anymore as his second ability. So, all of the fabled him, Fable of Ash, Hymn of Might, Verse of Cinder has been removed, probably to simplify his character a little bit and make him better at what he is good at. But it has been replaced with the Field Marshal Ashen Veil, so all of his cohort models in his battle group gain Ashen Veil as well. So it spreads out that they get a defense buff from range attacks and melee attacks, but then it also spreads out that Ashen Veil so they can give other people that type of protection against melee attacks as well. So that's still pretty nice, unfortunately, I suppose. They wanted to simplify this character up a little bit, and that's just what we got to lose. So, but let's check out his weapons, see if his weapons have changed at all. And no, it doesn't appear his weapons changed at all, except for, basically all Warcasters, Warlocks, Leader models, they all have dual attack, which is great. So they can make ranged and melee attacks while in, well, all that stuff. But he has his Scoring Flames, which is a Spray 10, Rate of Fire 1, POW 13, causes fire damage and continuous fire effect, and he has the ability to use this while in melee as well, so he can actually, you know, run in there, be able to hit people with his burning blades and spray attack them at the same time, which makes sense. I believe that most spray weapons are also, you know, ability to use in melee as well, because, well, they're spray, that just makes sense. Then he still has his burning blades as well. His burning blades are a mat 6, range 2, so it's a reach weapon, a POW 12, and also causes continuous fire. So that is great for him that he still has all those weapons, and they still do the exact same amount of damage. And then his feat, the Raging Inferno, this has changed slightly, but not by much. I think it's because the introduction of the command cards would have some issues with his feat, but we'll read it first. So the original one was, when an enemy model suffers a fire damage roll in Malakus' control range, you add an additional die to that roll. And then the second part of this is, additionally, fire continuous effects that affect enemy models in Malakus' control range cannot expire. So we have the first part, but the second part's been removed in Mark 4. So, but the ability for especially Meaneth guys to be able to really, you know, hammer in on the fire damage rolls. And yeah, so you automatically get boosted. Well, it's not even boosted. It's an additional damage die. So if you have a Warjack, you can also boost it on top. So for fire, for anything that does fire damage rolls, you get an additional die of damage on it. So you can get up to a four dice set. So yeah, no, that's a one that's, you know, incredibly good for all Protectorate models that use fire. So I don't think it's really that much of a hindrance not being able to, you know, not turn off fire continuous effects. Just because it's on the fire damage rolls anyway, so maybe it was a balanced situation. I don't know. I don't work for a privateer press, so. But let's check out his spells, see what we got here. Looks like we still have a Banishing Ward. So enemy upkeep spells and animize on target friendly model slash unit expire, and affected models cannot be targeted by enemy spells or animi. And it is upkeepable, so that is great. Looks like we still have ignite. So target friendly faction model slash unit gain a +2 to their melee attack damage rolls, and they gain the critical continuous fire effect. So that is nice. And it appears that the spell Brand of Fire has been replaced with Immolation. Immolation's much simpler and a little bit cheaper of a spell, but the original Brand of Fire that's been replaced is it deals fire damage, and then on a hit, target model and D3 nearest models within 5 inches suffer the continuous fire effect. So that is nice, pretty decent, but it's been replaced with Immolation. Immolation causes fire damage on a critical effect, on a critical hit. Model hit suffers a fire continuous effect. It's a little bit cheaper because it's a one target guy, a little bit less range, but it still catches people on fire. Not, maybe not as many people, but that's what we got to deal with on that for Mark IV. Then he still has his open fire. So cost 1 in his control range. Target cohort model in this model's battle group that is in his control range can immediately make 1 basic ranged attack, and a model can be targeted by open fire only once. So for 1 focus, you can make somebody make a ranged attack. And for 1 focus, that's actually not bad. And you can actually, that basically increases their rate of fire by 1. So that's never a bad thing, especially if they're shooting out flames for this particular warcaster. So, and he already has 7 focus, so, you know, what's one to get another attack in, right? And then we still have Scourge. So on a direct hit, models hit by this attack become knocked down. So always good to be able to knock models down. And this is auto knockdown, well, as long as you hit. So, and he already has a, you know, a 7 on his stuff. It's a range 8, cost 4, so it's pretty costly. And it's an AoE 2, so you're still knocking down 3 models minimum. So, or maximum, so that is always a phenomenal. So this guy's basically a tinderbox kind of caster. So you want him to be in there with flames, as many flames you can get, keep the flames coming. And he has that Ashen Veil that he can kind of spread around his army as long as you keep those Warjacks spread around. And he has a flamethrower, and well, flamethrowers are never a bad thing. At least not in my experience, unless of course you're on the other side of a flamethrower, and then that's a bad thing all around. But let's move on to the final warcaster we're going to be discussing today, and let's move on. Anson Durst, Rock of the Faith. Anson Durst is the rock on which the enemies of the Protectorate break, a bulwark to the faithful who weather tides of violence to keep blameless Menites safe. Though he has no interest in theosophical rumination occupying some of his brothers, none can question his devotion to the Paladin Creed. His humility and sense of duty are an inspiration to the soldiers he commands, each of whom feel compelled to emulate his steadfast courage. Arising from humble origins, his parents toiled among the countless farm laborers helping to keep the Protectorate fed. Durst might have gone unnoticed if not for his unusual size and strength. After drawing the attention of a veteran paladin passing through his village, Durst was recruited to the Order of the Wall at the age of 10. He endured training that has been perfected to forge youths into unyielding guardians of the faith. He took readily to combat training, but his mighty temper nearly undid him. A rage-fueled scuffle at the age of 12 resulted in him killing another boy, and that tragic event scarred Durst deeply. Shame drove him to an intense commitment to the Paladin Code. He still seeks to atone for this stain on his soul, finding solace in the discipline of his order and employing his strength to protect others. His soldier's life guarding the Protectorate's borders at the Northern Garrison was changed drastically by the late discovery of his Warcaster's gift. He was thrust into the role of military leader during the onset of the Signarn invasion of Sol. Durst earned an epithet, fighting as part of a force of Temple Flame Guards and Paladins to repel wave after wave of invading soldiers. As the war raged on, countless times he used his powers to prevent harm to his men. His machines advanced in tight formations along his soldiers, ready to receive blows intended for them. This tactic fast became the hallmark of Durst's approach to war. As the stalwart Paladin views his men under his command to be far more valuable than the warjacks that fight alongside them. Though committed to his oath, Anson Durst is first and foremost a military asset to the Protectorate. His main desire is to stand between the faithful and their enemies, but the Great Crusade requires him to obey priests who sometimes see him as a weapon with which they crush the faithless. Ever committed to his faith and his Paladin oath, he continually seeks to reconcile his duties as a warcaster with the need to remain true to his code. So this guy is a very protective of the faithful, which is kind of nice. He is actually very similar to the first guy that we read, being that of Tristan Durant. I think these guys are actually... What's weird is how much these guys are very protective of the people around them compared to some of the other, you know, Protectorate of Meneth who are more, you know, power hungry or just like to burn people. Like, these guys are very paladin-like, and especially if he's part of the Order of the Wall Paladin, he is very, very protective. Like, his whole thing is to protect, you know, innocent people. So, yeah, and having people like this in the Protectorate faith is actually something that makes them, you know, not as bad compared to some of the other leaders or the pyros that are in this army pretty relevantly. So, but yeah, he is just a good dude, very big, you know, very big shield, very blocky. But let's see his Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes and see what he is best at. And I'm going to make the assumption he's probably really good at protecting soldiers in his army using his warjacks, but we'll find out shortly. All right, let's start right reading off his stats. So he is a speed 5, as most of these guys are. He is a medium base model, so he's a little bit bigger than the average. He has a mat of 8, makes him a melee caster. I don't think he has any ranged weapons, so not really his thing. He has a defense of 13, an arm of 18, so he's, you know, a light or heavy jack depending on what army you play. He only has a magic of 6 and a control range of 12. So yeah, definitely not the highest of the caliber of spellcasters, but still very solid. And it looks like his abilities, he has Retaliatory Strike. So when this model is hit by a melee attack by an enemy model during your opponent's turn, he can swing back and make an attack against them as well. You can use that once per turn. Then another one, he still has Sturdy. So this model cannot be pushed, because, well, of course he is from the Order of the Wall, so that actually makes sense. And one of the things he lost is Brace for Impact, so this model does not move when slammed. So I imagine because he can't be pushed, that also means that he probably can't be moved by a slam, which makes sense. So I imagine that was kind of unnecessary to have that in there. Let's read about his weapon. His weapon is Recompense. That's the word. So yeah, one day I'll be able to pronounce it. So he has a mat 8, range 2, so it is a reach weapon. Pow 14, which makes sense since he is very melee. He's also a weapon master, so he gets an additional die on damage die when using this particular weapon. And then its ability is Eruption of Ash. So on a direct hit, when the model is boxed by this attack with this weapon, center a 3-inch AoE cloud template on the boxed model, and then it is removed from play. And then the template is a hazard that is in play for one round. Enemy models entering or ending their activation in the AoE suffer a POW 12 damage roll. So, yes. And does that affect him? Probably. I suppose it would actually do something to him, because, you know, he is in there, and I do not believe that he actually has immunities to fire, unfortunately. So I'm curious if there's a way to get around that. I'm not entirely sure, but being a weapon master, he's probably going to be, you know, popping a lot of people when he clocks him, so. And then let's read his feat, Bastion of Faith. Now, this is a very solid feat for somebody who likes to protect his people. So, it changed a little bit, but not by too much. So, while in Durst's control range, Warjacks and his battle group gain 4 armor. So, that's pretty significant on that end. They do not get Brace for Impact, so they can be pushed by slams or whatever. So that's one of the downsides of that one. But what's also nice about this second part of this, when a friendly faction warrior model in Durst control range is directly hit by an attack, while base to base with a Warjack in Durst battle group, you can choose to have the Warjack be directly hit instead, and then the Warjack is automatically hit and suffers all damage and effects from the attack. And that lasts for 1 round. Now, it's kind of like Shield Guard, except it doesn't specify what kind of attack. Like, it's not a ranged attack. It's not a melee attack. It's not a spray attack. It's just an attack on them while they're within base to base. And it doesn't specify that they can only do it once. So these guys could soak up all sorts of damage being directed at your, you know, friendly faction warrior models, as long as they're within base to base. So if you have a couple Warjacks out there, you can defend, you know, a couple different units at the same time. So yeah, this is it busted? No, I don't think it is, since you can only do it once. It's not like a spell or something like that. It's not an ability, it's on all the time. But yeah, being able to just make your Warjacks the center of damage with their +4 armor is actually pretty legit and will help save a lot of men, so. But let's read over his spells and see if any spells have changed. Alrighty, appears we still have a Boundless Charge. So during this activation, target friendly faction models can charge, or friendly faction model can charge without spending focus or being forced, and gains +2 speed and Pathfinder. So that's always useful to get your guys in there. Then we still have Bulwark. So while in the spellcaster's control range and base to base with one or more models in the battle group, the models in the spellcaster's battle group gain +2 defense and cannot be knocked down. So that's always useful, and +2 defense is always going to be nice to have, although it only works for models in the battle group for this one. So, and then we have a Cleansing Fire. This Cleansing Fire causes fire damage on a critical effect. Models hit suffer the continuous fire effect, and this is an AoE technically. So it is cost of 3, range of 8, AoE of 2, and it's a 14-8. So you can hit up to 3 models with this attack. That's always good, and critical catching them on fire, which is even nicer. And then we still have Deceleration. So while in the spellcaster's control range, friendly faction models gain +2 arm against ranged and arcane attack damage rolls. So you get the twofer on there, because there are a lot of spells that only affect ranged attacks, and then there's very few that protect against both ranged and arcane attacks. So it's always a very useful to have the specifications for both those. And then the last spell that we still have is the Hallowed Avenger. Target friendly faction cohort model gains Righteous Vengeance. If one or more friendly faction warrior models were destroyed or removed from play by an enemy attack while within 5 inches of a model with Righteous Vengeance during the last round, during your maintenance phase, that model can advance up to 3 inches and take a swing. So, and it's a basic attack, so it's not a swing. It's just if they want to take a ranged attack or a melee attack. I'm glad that has been a little bit more updated, because, you know, sometimes the guys that are near somebody, you know, aren't near enough. So being able to move 3 inches and then make a basic attack is always a very useful, and shots are always going to be fired easily. And it would actually give it reasons for it. So if you got somebody who's really far away, yeah, that'll save you some trouble. So this guy is very protective of the people around him, but he is definitely a very hard hitter on his own as well. He's got spells that, you know, help protect all of his men. He's got spells that help protect his Warjacks. He's just a lot of protection on here, like all sorts of different ways. So very balanced out, I guess. He's not super one end or the other. He's not like some of the other warcasters who like to use a lot of flames and all sorts of places. Like, he still has his, you know, Eruption of Ash on his weapon, but he's definitely not somebody who's trying to catch a bunch of people on fire all at once. So I like him. He's pretty, just a good stalwart defender type of dude. And you want to get him in there, have him do his due, get his wax in, protect his people, keep him going. moving forward. Very front line caster right here. But that looks like that is it for us today. Thank you guys so much if you're still here. I appreciate it. Please like, subscribe. Let me know how you like this. Let me know if you have any stories about any of these casters, both against and with these casters. Please let your friends and fellow gamers know about this YouTube channel. It does help to grow the channel, get our class size a little bit bigger, and help this steam train keep on rolling. And thank you again, Privateer Press, for letting us read your fantastic lore. And as always, class dismissed.